Welcome to the Bengals Beat Podcast, presented by JustFoto.com and Inquirer Sports. Here every Tuesday, Cincinnati.com beat writers take you inside Paul Brown Stadium for the scoop on all things Bengals. Hear from players, coaches, anybody else relevant to the news of the week. Remember, you can subscribe on iTunes or Google Play and also listen the moment a new episode posts on our must-have Inquirer Bengals app. Let's go.
Welcome to the latest edition of the Bengals Beat Podcast. Paul Danger Jr., Jim Lasarski. Jim,
yeah.
How are you?
I'm good.
You had a long, long weekend.
Yeah, I did. It was fun. First Bengals game action.
Right.
You know, which was interesting because it's a little, I guess, Bengals Beat. Well, you're listening to Bengals Beat Podcast, so we'll take you inside. Prior to Friday, I'd been in the press box maybe a couple of times. I've only been around certain areas of the stadium prior to Friday. So parking, like all of those things were, it's my rookie year.
It is your
so
rookie year.
I didn't know where to park. I didn't know where to go. Right. I stood in the wrong line to get in for a while.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, just
didn't know how to get out of the garage.
Didn't know how to get out of the garage.
I've had that moment, the first moment when you pull up in the, you know, and the gate doesn't go up, and you're just sitting there at the garage looking around. There's not a soul anywhere. It's 12:15 at night. It's dark. And you're just thinking, yep, I'm locked in for good.
Right.
I'm locked in for good. And then you're like, oh, I have the scanner on the pass.
Yeah.
That will, but it, which lifts the gate. But you wouldn't think you would need that. You get
no.
The gate's just going up when you pull up to them from that
right.
side.
So, yeah. So, you know.
It's all tricks of the trade. Tricks of the trade.
You know, things you learn. That was good. And then you helped me out and handled the locker room on Saturday post game, caught up with some injuries, and I went home and did a charity event after 6 hours of driving post game. So
yeah.
It was good. It was a good weekend.
Yeah. So we had our first game action of the year. So we've had training camp. It was a busy week, so we had to apologize off the jump. Because the way the schedule fell, it was just impossible for us to
right.
put a podcast in next week that wouldn't immediately be old.
Right.
We needed something with some shelf life, so we kind of had to wait for the Giants' practices and game to pass through before we put something new in. Now, remember, as the season goes by, we will have this for you on Tuesday mornings. You can count on it. Every week, because that's when it is a perfect way to keep it looking back while also looking ahead, and it's an off day for the team, so it's perfect. But in camp, it's just chaos.
Right.
So it's hard to keep track for everything. But we've got you here today. So we're gonna look back a little bit at kind of some winners and losers from Giants week, really, with the two joint practices in the game. And we're going to talk about next week's game against Tampa, what to look for there, take some of your Twitter questions. We're going to run through some of the names that are starting to pop up. This is the time of year where, you know, camp is wrapping up. Your actual camp practices are wrapping up. They'll still keep going, but the names of those that are making a splash are starting to kind of surface. I mean, you could always say, oh, they had a good practice or two, but now you're getting to the point where the entire camp is almost done.
Right.
And you've really seen certain guys show where they're at. So we're going to kind of go down that list a little bit for you, too, all on today's BBP, which we really have not done a good job of pushing the BBP hashtag.
No,
but I think people need to know what it means first.
Right.
Right?
I think it was because of as what you just opened with, that the schedule was a little goofy.
Yeah.
You know, now that we might, even next week will be goofy because we'll be flying back from Tampa.
Oh, Lord, yeah.
Monday night. So, I mean, you know, I think it's the hardcore guys, and then, you know,
yeah.
Hashtag BBP.
Yeah. Those.
We'll get it going.
We will, and we count on you to keep it alive so people understand that it's cool to be down with BBP.
Right.
And we'll get to all that soon enough. So I guess let's do this to start. Let's start here with our Bengals 23, Giants 10 in the preseason opener. More importantly, the Bengals' first team offense and defense looked spectacular.
Yes.
They both did about as good as you can do in the preseason, with the offense taking six plays to go 52 yards and spread the ball around to everybody, score a touchdown, and everybody put on hats and smiles. And then the defense, 2-3 and outs against Eli Manning, and they had – the Giants ran six plays for negative two yards against the first team D and forced a punt and a missed field goal because there was a long kickoff return. So put on your hats at that point. You're feeling great. So a great debut. And really, in this time of year, if you're talking about the reality of the team, you're going to evaluate a lot of players in the back of the roster, and that's all fine. But as far as what your season really is going to be, or maybe a look at what where your team is at, you know, that's all you really needed to see was what happened in the first 7 minutes of the game, really.
Yeah, and I think, you know, if you guys were reading along and following along on Twitter, as we trust you were at Cincinnati.com, through the week of the Giants practices, Tuesday, if I'm remembering the days correctly, didn't start very well for first-team offense. Hugh Jackson and some of those guys were not happy, saying, hey, we weren't quite sharp and ready to go. You know, and the first-team defense didn't really – I mean, in the practices, you're not really going to see much. But I think the fact that Wednesday's joint practice went well for the first-team offense, they felt they rebounded. They were able to carry that over into game action. First-team defense, it was funny. I sort of asked a couple of the guys, you know, is it sort of like facing an Aroldis Chapman fastball? Like, you know it's coming. Like, the Giants stuff, they're like, oh, we kind of knew what they were going to run. I was like, we still have to stop it.
Right.
And that doesn't mean you, just because you kind of know what's happening, doesn't mean you're going to have any success. So they were very happy, you know, on balance, of course, nitpick, and they had some issues on film. But, yeah, I think that was impressive. And I think for people who may not be as familiar with the Giants, they're not a bad team. It's not a bad offense. I mean, once Eli got comfortable with that new offensive coordinator out of Green Bay, Ben McAdoo, and obviously we all know what Odell Beckham did, but, I mean,
their offensive line is shoddy.
It is shoddy. They're not a terrible offense, I guess, is what I'm saying. It's not. I mean, I would expect them to look really good Monday against a rookie quarterback and a really bad team.
Yeah.
No Victor Cruz, I understand. But I don't know. I was impressed, I guess. My first Bengals game action of, as you said, those first team offense defense, it was impressive.
Yeah, and I think, you know, if Marshall Newhouse ends up as your starting right tackle, something has gone wrong in your offseason. And that's probably what's going to end up doing. They've got, you know, they've got a rookie in Eric Flowers.
Right.
They've got Marshall Newhouse. They've got a lot of young parts up front. And if there's one thing that you can go by, it's that if your offensive line is inept, you're probably not going to win a whole lot of games. I mean, as much as football has changed, that has not changed. There's a reason, you know, 75% of the top 20 picks in the draft are in the trenches.
Right.
You know, I mean, there's a reason that these guys are so valued. It's because you have to have it. I don't think the Giants have that.
Isn't that what you want to see then? So maybe Giants offensive line is not good. And maybe it bears out that way. But then you would say, well, the Bengals have an advantage even without Michael Johnson, and they absolutely did what they were supposed to do.
Yeah, it's definitely what you want to see. I wouldn't deny that. But I would say that I think of, you know, I don't know that Giants team. Now, this is unfair to say after one preseason game and a couple of series, but they clearly have some holes that they have to work out. But does it make it any less impressive what the Bengals did? It's an NFL team, and Giants have a pedigree.
You're just a hater, Paul. You're a hater.
Hate. It's a haters ball. That's all it is. I think you certainly have to come away feeling great about the Bengals through their first game. So you feel good about where the Bengals are at through what you saw for their first team. But let's do this. Give me some winners and losers. We'll start with winners because we're positive here.
Yeah.
We don't need to be, you know, no hate. The hate, we yeah. no haters ball. I feel bad about that. So let's. I do.
No, it's a legit. You're being. You're, you know,
I'm trying to
bringing,
be real.
You're bringing the you know hardcore football guy stuff out, breaking down line play,
breaking down line play. In the first preseason game. No. That's when you know it's hardcore. So let's do this. Let's talk about some Bengals winners, losers. We'll start with winners. From really. You can go as general as the first, you know, from camp, but, you know, right. kind of maybe more specifically from Giants week. What, any one particular person that stuck out to you as a winner for you?
Wow. I guess I'll be a little football nerdy. I did like the rookie tight end, Tyler Kroft.
Yeah.
Because we wrote about this early, and maybe we talked about it, and actually the last podcast was CJ Uzomah and Tyler Kroft being like, holy cow, we can't block. We don't know how to block.
Right.
What you know, and then here was Tyler Kroft on Friday night, and he said post-game, he essentially was put in there to run block. He ran a couple patterns, but, I mean, he was there to put a hat on somebody and won a one-on-one matchup to get James Wilder Jr. into the end zone. What does that mean long term? I don't know, but I thought, you know, considering the fact that this was an issue on draft day, it was an issue right when they were putting pads.
Yeah.
And here we are in game action, so I like that.
Yeah, I think really that was one of those groups that I found myself trying to specifically make sure I kept a close eye
right.
on anytime CJ Uzomah was out there, anytime Tyler Kroft was out there. And even further back down the depth chart, just to see how they look blocking, because it's the one thing that we just don't quite know. And, you know, there were some moments where CJ Uzomah looked a little lost and maybe got beat, but I didn't think that it was so noticeable that, you know, guys were getting hurt behind him or anything
right.
like that. I mean, it wasn't a glaring thing where they looked completely out of place at all. I mean, Uzomah in particular, and Kroft actually had some really nice moments.
Right, yeah, and that was and again, you know, these tight end spots are very important. And as you mentioned quite often, NFL snaps behind Tyler Eifert, it was zero.
Yeah.
So it's very important, and we may talk about it all the way until – you know, whenever, but the fact that they were able to show at least a little bit in that first game, getting out of a 3-point stance and blocking was important. I guess off the top, you know, again, when a team was this consistent on the depth chart, I like the fact that Tyler Eifert, the stuff that we've seen in practice, mm-hmm. translated.
Yeah,
he did stay into the second team with Josh Johnson. Caught a nice pass. You know, it's one thing. Again, we tweet about it all the time. He's open. He looks good.
Mm-hmm.
But even he said, "I haven't been hit since a year ago." So you know, we've talked about it a ton, but it finally happened. Other grown men wanted to bring him down to the ground with malice.
They did with yes, ill
with
intentions.
Malice, ill intentions, and he got up.
He survived.
And, you know, it mattered. It mattered to him. He said he didn't think about any of his issues. And, you know, especially on that first series, he caught a pass and helped affect a touchdown. So, mm-hmm. you know, Mohsenu said, you know, Tyler Eifert being on the field sort of spaced things out. So, to me, again, old news maybe, but we actually saw it in games. And to me,
yeah.
I thought that tight end group was a win.
Yeah, no, I would agree with you. I mean, the Eifert thing. And I just can't – I feel like we say this and write this over and over again, and I just can't stress it enough, is that you – and you saw it. The difference when he's out there is remarkable because of the matchup problem that he creates where he can block in the run game. And he is a crazy challenging weapon for a linebacker to cover. And, you know, when you have those and A.J. Green on the outside and Jeremy Hill behind you, really those three, just those three alone, I mean, I don't know how a whole lot of teams can hang with that. I mean,
right.
that's a lot to ask. And then you throw Mohsenu and Marvin Jones into the mix. And the weapons, the offensive weapons, should everyone stay healthy. And then you throw it into Hugh Jackson's crazy mind, who – you know, was as creative as any coach in football last year. I mean, the potential was apparent.
Right.
I mean, that drive was exactly what you want it to look like for other teams, for other defensive coordinators that have to study.
Right.
They look at that and they say, well, who the hell do we – how do we cover this? How do we stop this? They're barreling up the middle, power running. They're throwing to A.J. Green, who you can't cover one-on-one. Eifert's beating everybody. You know, Sanu is a nice red zone target. That was really, to me, I can't – because in the preseason, I just feel like you guys – that to me was the number one winner, was seeing it in person, because you have not seen Jeremy Hill on the field with Tyler Eifert. You haven't seen that at all. You haven't seen all those players out there together with all those weapons in your line that returns all five starters.
And that's a great point, Paul, because let's be real, the first couple weeks leading, or a handful of practices leading into this game, was Hugh Jackson not being very happy.
Right.
So, yeah, without a doubt, it was.
And that's an important thing, because, you know, it was the Tuesday practice. Bengals offense came out, looked bad, you know, just weren't doing many things, fumbles. There was no interceptions through 2 days by Andy Dalton against the Giants. But there was just a lot of sloppiness. They had a couple nice plays, but then Hugh Jackson pretty much ripped them. You know, came in and talked about the sick of the bad snaps and dropping the football, was calling people out, called out Rex Burkhead and Cedric Pierman and a number of other players, basically. And then the next day, I mean, the Bengals offense was just on fire out there. I mean, they were doing everything. They were hitting long passes. They were running it, you know, winning 11-on-11. They were doing everything. And then you saw kind of an extension of that on Friday. And so it was a nice progression, and that's what you want to see. So I don't know. I think another winner for me, and this is in that same vein, would be Marvin Jones. We were kind of wondering what the heck was going on, to tell you the truth, because he was not participating, and then he was barely participating on like the third team. And you just wondered what is going on. And Marvin Lewis is calling him out, and it was a lot of weird stuff. And he talked a little bit to us about it, just getting back to used to football pounding. I mean, he hasn't played. His last game was January of 2014.
Right.
So, I mean, you're talking like, I think I added it up, it was like 586 days since he played in a game. And this just was saying that it was wearing him down a little bit, you know, and but he came out that Wednesday practice, full go, taking hits. I mean, he got cleated in the side at one point. He got hit in the back on the goal line. He was out there doing it full out. And then in the game, they kept him in there till midway through the second quarter because they wanted to get him a catch, and they kept trying to. And in a shocking development, Josh Johnson struggled to get it to him. I mean, he was just Marvin Jones running wide open over and over again, and he couldn't seem to get the ball. They just wanted to get him to catch one so he could go out there and make a move and take a hit and then get the heck out of the game. So he ends up in there into the middle of the second quarter. He finally catches one right in his sideline, and he's like, well, I'm not going out of bounds. He jets up and tries to get a few extra yards. I want to bring you some of Marvin Jones, a conversation that we had. It's just a brief little conversation with Marvin Jones from after the game on Friday, talking about returning in and taking a hit and just kind of being back part of the mix again. So here's Marvin Jones.
It felt good, you know. It felt good just to, you know, get out there. And obviously, it's been a while. You know, I haven't been out there since San Diego in 2013. So it just felt good to get out there and, you know, get my feet wet again. And
were you anxious to get that first ball? They were trying to get it to you a couple times.
Yeah. We were trying to get it, but I finally got it, and that was the end of my night. So I mean, it was good to get it, and you know. Get tackled and, you know, go through all the all the basic things that you have to go through to get back into it.
So no thought about stepping out of bounds there?
No. You know, I mean, you know me. I hope you didn't forget. You know, I'm not just gonna step out or let one guy tackle me. You know, that's just what I do.
Out of bounds.
Not even in the preseason to step.
No, I don't care what it is. Football is football.
So yeah, so I think that's a if you're talking about the first team on offense, that's a big win there. Let's go deeper. Let's dive a bit deeper into who we liked coming out of some of the reserves and what you saw. I'll start with a guy that we had talked about previously from the mock game and just from camps. We just sort of had seen him flashing a little bit, and he came out and played a lot of snaps and played well, and that was Deshaun Williams. The kid out of Clemson. And the thing about that was I remember Marvin Lewis talking to us around, I don't know, sometime in the off season about how when they picked him up because they were scouting all those, that Clemson had all those great players last year. And so they were constantly scouting Clemson to take a look at who they liked there. And they said, and this guy that wasn't on their list just kept making plays. Was Deshaun Williams, who was playing down there in the middle next to Grady Jarrett and all those guys. And the guy just kept making plays. He wasn't necessarily really a starter. He was a starter for his past year, but in his previous years, he started maybe a little less than half the games. But he just made plays, and so they brought him in here, and he's proven to do that as well. He had a sack. He had a sack in the game. They called him Baby Geno. He walks like Geno. He's got like the heels in touching against each other. That waddle, the Geno waddle, little guy who uses speed and leverage. And they can only hope they get anything in the area of what Geno has been. But kind of the same mold that way. I mean, Geno was a fourth round pick,
right?
But when you're a fourth round pick or an undrafted free agent, you're still off the radar a bit. So I mean, but he's come in and he's looked pretty good. I think he should be a win for what this team is looking at right now.
Yeah, he and again going down into the depths of the roster, and you mentioned sort of a mid round draft pick. I mean, it'd be his line mate, who was a draft pick, Marcus Hardison out of Arizona State, and not just because he had the sack after Deshaun Williams, but the fact that, A, he played nearly an entire game, and he rotated on the interior defensive line and also defensive end. And I remember when he was drafted, you know, the coaching staff said, well, we kind of think he could be a Wallace Gilberry type. We can move him. He can provide that depth inside, outside. But again, you just don't know until you see. And the fact that he played, he got snaps against that, as Paul Dana Jr. believes, porous offensive line.
Porous
for the New York Giants. But he did get first team reps, first team snaps against their first team. You know what I'm saying? And played till the end of the game. And another sack himself after Deshaun Williams. And actually, they were joking in the locker room after how Hardison felt. You know, Williams got to Ricky Stanzi just before he could, so he had to,
right?
You know, he had to follow up and get his own, which, you know, in a very, very competitive defensive line room, to have guys at the end of it,
yeah.
Well, Deshaun Williams, especially at the end of it as an undrafted guy,
yeah.
Really, you're like, wow, those guys really flashed. On a really strong day for that whole line. I mean, Pat Sims was making plays. He was in the backfield a ton. So, I mean, you know, it was good day for that group.
Yeah, I mean, we've talked about the depth of the defensive line, and I think, you know, when the Giants go to their twos and the Bengals' twos on that defensive line are up there, you know, are ones, essentially, 1As. I mean, I think that showed. Will Clark made some nice plays as well. He played a lot of snaps. So you're seeing that now, that depth they've talked about, and why we don't really know how the hell they're going to cut this down. You know, I think you have it at – I mean, I think I'm starting to come to terms with the fact that they're going to have to keep 10 defensive linemen, which 9 is the previous high. I think that you almost have to, barring injury where somebody goes out for the year. I don't know who you cut. I don't you're not going to cut Marcus Hardison. You're not going to cut Pat Sims. You're not going to cut Marcus Hunt. You're not going to cut Will Clark.
Right.
You're not cutting any of those guys. And you're certainly not cutting anybody in front of them. Right. You're not cutting their starters.
Right.
So I don't,
oh, yeah.
So I don't, right. I don't think that they can do that. And I think now you talk about Deshaun Williams, who's just a perfect practice squad person.
And that's right. And what's interesting about a practice squad guy who, or an undrafted guy who flashes that, let's just say he shows up again in Tampa, right? Now that there's film on him, now that other teams kind of know what he can do or whatever, he might become a desirable entity. I mean, you're talking about an interior guy who just makes plays. That could be interesting.
Let me lob something out there to you, okay? And let's just hash this out, because I don't think we've ever even really talked about this aspect. Well, a little bit, but not much before. Definitely not on the podcast. Do you trade someone off this defensive line and maybe add a veteran receiver or somebody at a position more of need? Or would you only do that if, say, Marvin Jones or Mohamed Sanu got hurt? Or do you feel confident enough in what is behind those three at receiver? Because I think that's the position, or maybe right. or maybe a tight end if you were worried about that. Right. I would say receiver would be the more likely position. Would you trade somebody on the back end of, so whether you're talking about any of those guys?
Right.
Even probably from even, I don't know that you would want to trade Wallace Gilberry, but even if you're talking about, you believe that maybe Brandon Thompson or somebody right. like that, who has a lot of potential and,
right.
you know, I mean, it looks like he's going to be a real, would start for most teams. You could probably get a pretty nice piece for Brandon Thompson, a pretty nice player for Brandon Thompson.
Yeah, that's interesting, Paul. Well, first, you can dive a little more deeply into recent Bengals history in terms of preseason trades, because we're at the end. I mean, it's not camp anymore, so you can dig into that. I guess for me, you can't say no, because the goal is, since I've been here, from top down, ownership down, it's about winning the Super Bowl, putting the best 53 on the roster.
Yeah.
So if you put out feelers or someone came to you and you looked at the depth chart and you said, well, you know, losing someone here and gaining someone there on the whole makes us a better 53, I don't see how you say no.
Right.
I just don't know that I'll be honest. I'm not as familiar with their history with that.
Well,
making that type of move.
If they trade, which is rare, they do it about right before pre. Reggie Nelson came over in a trade that was just a steal for them and still is at this point. Was it David Jones, I think, was the trade?
The fact that you just named that other guy, and I have no way.
Yeah.
I've known who Reggie Nelson is.
Yes.
Shows it was, that was
a
win.
It was a Jaguars heist is what it was. And then, you know, they traded Clinton McDonald for Kelly Jennings with the Seahawks a couple years back. Clinton McDonald was kind of I would say maybe if I was comparing him to this roster, you know, just a young defensive tackle that was right on the cusp. And the Seahawks knew it. And he ended up being a big part
right.
of the Super Bowl
yeah.
team, signed in Tampa, and they got Kelly Jennings. They were really low on corners at that point, and Jennings ended up being a third or fourth corner, I think, on that squad. They have done that before, and they're not against that. And I just wonder, when you're talking about keeping 10 defensive linemen and having a guy like Deshaun Williams on your practice squad, if maybe you're not like, you know what, maybe we can afford to sacrifice that position and get a quality number four receiver. I mean, now we've seen Burkhead out here playing
right.
well as pretty much a receiver in the slot, and they like him. And Mario Alford has done some nice things, but he's still a rookie who's going to be limited in his playbook, I would think, this year. So maybe you do. Maybe you do. If you're not seeing what you want on Denarius Moore, or you're counting on Greg Little, I mean,
right.
maybe you make that deal. And, or, you know, maybe it's a different position. Maybe it's a tight end. I don't know.
Right.
Whatever you feel like.
And especially, Paul, to that point where you're talking about some really, really young and or low draft picks, and you're talking about the salary implications and the fact that this team still has a lot of people they would like to loop into extensions and things. Well, look, if your backup linemen that you really like are only making a few hundred thousand dollars base, I mean, all that stuff plays into it.
Yep.
It all does, for sure.
Yeah, they can't. I mean, there's only certain things you can do. You can't. You can only so much cap they can add right now. I mean, they're up against it in that area. But if you can make it fit, and let's say you're wondering if you're going to be able to, if maybe Brandon Thompson's going to actually get a decent deal, and I hate to keep putting him out there because I don't know anything that they would be hanging Brandon Thompson out there. They love Brandon Thompson. But if you knew that, okay, he's in the last year of his deal and he's going to be getting maybe a bigger number than you're comfortable with, and he might be one of those guys you have to let walk next year, then maybe you could get something for him now.
Right.
And that could help your team when you feel like you have depth behind him. Now, I personally have been of the mold. I think Brandon Thompson should have been starting since mid last year. You just watch the guy play. He just constantly makes plays. So I don't know. But if you're looking at the back end of this roster, then you feel like the I don't know, the drop-off would be massive considering their depth, and that Gilberry can play inside.
Right.
And, you know, Hardison can play both now. So you've got guys that can plug that position. So maybe it's a luxury spot for them. I don't know. It's certainly something that I wouldn't discount at this point. Let's go to, I want to quickly jump over to the haters side. Haters going to hate. And I hate to hate, particularly this guy, because this is not about as a person who everybody loves Devin still, but he had a rough, He had a rough day on Friday. I mean, he was getting washed out.
Yeah.
You know, and that's kind of what they have seen in the past. And, you know, we've talked a lot about him building back up, and, you know, he's lost weight, but he's strong, and he's in the best shape of his life, and man on a mission and all that stuff. And, you know, he wasn't getting push. He was getting – holes were getting open right on him. They were giving him a lot of snaps to give him a chance to go out there and prove. And we weren't seeing it. No. We weren't seeing the difference. He looked very similar to the way that he has in the past, and just a guy that was just kind of getting pushed around a lot in there. And that was not a good sign.
No, I think you and I looked at each other, and there was a play where nothing happened. Like, he held position on the line, and we were like, that was good.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it was that kind of Friday night, unfortunately, where it was like, wow, like, you know, he wasn't pushed off. He didn't create any push, but he kind of took up some space. And it was like that was kind of, that was a highlight.
Yeah.
Which is a tough highlight to pull when you're, that's what you're talking about.
And let's be honest, when you're at the position in the roster that he is, and we just got done raving over a full defensive line, you need to be making plays.
Right.
And you definitely don't need to be standing out for getting washed out.
Right.
And he needs to be making plays like Deshaun Williams and Marcus Hardison were making plays. And we just frankly didn't see it. He's got three more games, but you know, you wonder where that's at, because the time is running out, I think.
Right.
At this point for him. And I hate to say that, because personally you can't not, I mean, how can you not root for the guy? I mean, he's one of the best stories the NFL has had in years. He's an unbelievable person, but he's out of practice squad eligibility.
Yeah.
You know, this is it. You either make the 53 or you're on the street right now.
Right.
So we'll see what comes of that. But he had a rough one. Anybody else maybe struggle that you saw?
You know, unfortunately for Devin in that regard, I saw more collective struggles. I thought. You know, for all the talk of the 1-2 punch of Gio Bernard and Jeremy Hill and how valuable that is, maybe it's worst case scenario. I'm wondering what happens.
Yeah.
I James Wilder was given a long look as a feature back. And I don't know if
really,
it was
partially because of Cedric Pierman and Rex Burkhead going out with injury.
Well, exactly.
Right.
Exactly. Because Rex Burkhead started in the slot at wide receiver, which may have been a message to Marvin Jones for missing a little bit of time.
Mm-hmm.
But even, I mean, wow. And I know depth is always an issue for a lot of teams and a lot of places, but it just was one of those things where I'm like, wow, that third string running back that And you're like, well, what does that matter? But it kind of does. I guess I've seen it too often in other areas that I've other teams I've covered where that guy gets hurt, and all of a sudden the other guy got hurt on special teams.
Yeah.
And now we can't do anything. Or so it was just some backup offensive linemen.
Yeah.
That Hugh Jackson said pass pro for the backups has been an issue. That's why A.J. McCarron got some reps with the first team offensive line, because Hugh Jackson was like, I got to see what this guy can do when he actually has time to throw the ball.
Right.
So it's kind of that weird balance of like, well, for as good as the defensive line has been, is it more them being good than the so but that carried over to Friday night a little bit. I mean, say what we want about Josh Johnson and Keith Wenning. You know, there were times where they had to, you know, they didn't have the luxury that Andy Dalton had sometimes of just being able to have a clean pocket.
Yeah.
So I'm hoping it's not coming across as wishy washy that I can't pinpoint a guy, but I think there were some things, I guess, going forward here into Tampa and where I'm like, okay, let's look at this group again.
Yeah.
And is this a carryover?
Well, and I think it's all the more reason why Jake Fisher and Cedric Abuehi are here.
Right.
Because they recognized the fall off that they had, a real empty zone in their depth chart. I mean, Eric Winston was on the street last year when they picked him up, and he's been great here, and they like him a lot, and that's fantastic. But he's still, he's one of the older offensive linemen in the league.
Right.
And he was on the street for a reason for a while, and you've got Jake Fisher who's now here. But after that, you know, you're talking about guys like T.J. Johnson and Tanner Hawkinson that haven't done much. I mean, who Trey Hopkins, who's been banged, and, you know, who
he
knows?
He missed the game Friday, right.
So it's like, okay, what do you really have there?
Right.
You don't have – I mean, they have a big question mark there in their depth on their offensive line, and that's why Fisher and Obwehi eventually this season could end up proving to be very important to this team.
Right.
So we'll see. But you mentioned – you kind of skipped over it, and you were talking about the depth. And I don't know how much you worry about it because of how the roles have changed, but, you know – in a little bit of action, Giovanni Bernard didn't do much.
No.
And did a lot of dancing, and it could play with what you're talking about of, okay, well, you're behind a different offensive line.
Right.
So different. But he had some runs behind the first-team offensive line and couldn't really do much with them, similar to what we saw last year where you saw Jeremy Hill just getting huge chunks of yards behind the same line that Giovanni was struggling.
Right.
And why their roles changed so much. But it brings up the point of you wonder how much load will fall on Jeremy Hill.
Right.
If the discrepancy continues to be large, and we're talking about a couple series in a preseason game. So, Giovanni,
it's worth watching.
It's worth watching, though, keeping an eye on of how effective are these two compared to each other. Because when push comes to shove, you know, Gio may just be a third down back, but maybe he's not really getting hardly any carries except for draws.
Which is honestly, I don't think that's what, I mean, Jeremy Hill will tell you he'll take 500 carries, but I don't think Hugh Jackson and Marvin Lewis want that. I mean, they want Jeremy Hill.
But they have to do that, though. Well, if the discrepancy is a full yard per carry.
Yeah. No, they
or more.
No, you're right. They wouldn't not do it.
But yeah.
I think in their perfect mind, they want Jeremy Hill being able to be effective in a Super Bowl, which means him not getting 500 carries.
Yes.
And I'm, you know, that's hyperbole with 500, but you know what I mean? It's just kind of, you're right. That's definitely worth bearing out here in the next couple preseason games.
Yeah. And they'll figure out what that role looks like.
Right.
But I mean, if you get to the point where, I mean, like last year where you're talking Jeremy Hill averaging 5+.
Right,
a lug, and Gio's dancing and getting taken down the backfield.
Right.
How many times are you really going to give it to that
guy?
I mean, maybe not that much, and that's fine if that, you know, he's so much better in space catching the ball as the Darren Sproles type that I think that's the way it should be. But I would say it kind of put a little something in the back of my head a little bit. Okay, I'll keep an eye on that.
Right.
You know, because it was a tough night for him. While we're talking running backs in depth, let's talk about Terrell Watson. okay, y'all just said who. Terrell Watson, who was an undrafted free agent, entered in the fourth quarter. So we're going deep
here. Deep.
Deep into the depth chart.
You know what? The same people who are watching Bengals preseason fourth quarter football
are listening.
The same people who, who we love you.
We know who you are. You're our people. That's why we're talking to you.
Exactly.
So Terrell Watson comes in, tears off about a 26-yarder, ends up 7 for 52. Everybody knows he can run the ball.
Yes.
I mean, the guy led the country in rushing last year. Now, granted, it was at Azusa.
Yes, Azusa Pacific.
Azusa Pacific. So it's a bit of a jump for him to the NFL. Right. But running the ball, at least, he looked like he belonged, certainly with amongst that group of people that a lot of them might be selling insurance by the time October comes around. But, you know, still, I mean, I thought he's one of those that looked – pretty good. Jim, you talked to him. What was his take on his first game?
Yeah, he kind of like anyone else, he said, any rookie, even a first rounder, says obviously there's a speed of the game difference, but to him, he's like, look, I know what I can do. I know that I'm a downhill runner. I mean, he did not surprise himself with that run, the fact that he made a defender miss. For him, it was more of the knowing your assignments and understanding how to block and to read a defense and be in the right position. That was, you know, he admitted that was not a strong suit of his.
Yeah.
But no, we'll hear from him. He felt good about it and feels, I mean, he knows he's got an uphill battle, but in terms of getting the ball in his gut,
yeah,
that's something he feels he can do.
It's really a practice squad battle more than likely at this point. That's fine. I mean, how many times have you seen for teams, in particular this one, where a guy gets on the practice squad, an injury happens about week 5, then another one in week 7, and all of a sudden that practice squad guy is bumped up and is here. He has not been a contributor on special teams, and that's an issue for him, because if you are going to be a running back on the back end of this roster, you have to be a good special teams player.
Right.
And he is nowhere to be seen on the special teams depth chart, and that went pretty deep in the first game. But here, let's bring in Terrell, your conversation with Terrell, talking about his debut and a pretty nice one, at least as far as you know, carries and yards are concerned. So here's Terrell Watson.
First NFL action. What was I'll start with the easy one, like speed of the game, that whole thing. What was that kind of like?
No, it's like the first part of the game with me. My first one is like was shockness, like, oh dang, I'm in the car right now. And
right.
I mean, at the first play, of course, I'm going to go fast because you have a lot of things going through your mind. But after the first play, like, I'll fly and like just start flowing with the game and slow down your head, and it becomes pretty easy.
Okay, what was the post game like film breakdown evaluation like? Because obviously, you're out there if you miss a block or slow getting over. But so, what was that part like for you in terms of getting a critical review of your?
We came in half where we drew up the scheme again, and we realized that they had a nickel blitz and that we was missing, and we like made an adjustment in the locker room to get the nickel blitz fixed, and then we went out there and I missed the nickel blitz, so yeah, I totally forgot. But after that, then we got cleaned up, and then yeah, it was good.
What is that like for you? Where, I mean, you're here trying to, I mean, you're learning on the fly, but also trying to earn a spot somewhere. So, were you mad at yourself afterwards or Monday? I mean, how did that kind of work? You know what I mean?
Obviously you're upset because you got the quarterback killed. But in games, football, things happen, and you have to have a short-term memory. And something happens, just flush it to get the next play. And that's pretty much what it was. It's like, okay, I messed up. Great. Let's go back and let's not mess up again. The quarterback get killed.
Well, in terms of getting the ball in your gut and running, how did that feel?
It was good. I know what kind of runner I am. I know I'm a downhill runner, and I make people not want to tap me. That's who I am, and I feel that that's one of my best qualities I have is running downhill. So,
right. Feel good to kind of, especially, it's the long run. Mm-hmm. Made a guy miss early, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then were able to get outside?
Yeah.
Can you walk me through that a little bit? What were you seeing? The
place was designed to go that way. And, and this, I think it was this corner was off the edge. And it was just making one guy miss. And the line did a great job filling that side off. And we had CJ, the tight end, on that side filling the DN off. And just follow my blockers and get downfield.
Okay. And then I guess to get out into space and to actually, like you said, use your speed, I'd imagine, again, because you're trying to show, right? So it's not that you're thinking about it in the moment, like, hey, okay, fast surface, feeling fast. I mean, I imagine 7 carries and, you know, was it 50-something yards had to have been.
Yeah, this is great. 7 carries, 50-something yards, that's, like, pretty, I think that's pretty well. I don't know, when you're always, you shouldn't really think about a guy running fast. It's like a natural ability. I played football for 16 years. I know what to do. I'm in open space, you know?
Right.
So just touchdowns north, touchdowns that way, and that's where I'm going.
Right. Something guys will talk about is like the not just the speed of the game, but the like I belong here moment. You said like, well, that's my physical ability. Did you wonder? Because it wasn't a game. I know it's camp, but it's a game's different. Opposing team's different. Did you wonder? Could I make an NFL player miss? Could I get out? Because you know here in camp, I mean your reps are limited.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Did you wonder about it? Or did you know it, or did that like verify it?
I mean I'm pretty confident in my ability to make people miss and like. Make people not want to tackle me, so like it's just when I get those opportunities, not missing, not running into the guy, not to make the guy miss, you know, and just being a smart football player and knowing where the touchdown's at.
So we've heard from Terrell, we've heard from a couple guys. We've done a good job with winners and losers here, Jim.
Yeah.
Congratulations, you did well.
Thank you.
We you know, off the cuff, just letting it fly. I think we did real well. Let's do this. So next week we got Tampa.
Right.
Our first roadie of the year.
Yep.
Very exciting. We'll be flying into Tampa on Sunday. A seafood dinner will be in my future. I can tell you that much. Tampa's a great flight because we go in. The hotel that the team stays at is very close to the airport. And that's only about 5 to 10 minutes from the stadium.
Cool.
So it's like... Such as it's the smoothest, one of the smoothest in the loop for us to get in and out. And there's a great seafood spot right near the hotel that the shuttle guy, what was his name last year? He was a very nice man who took all of us over there for free, shuttled us back and forth to this place, and it was really good. I've talked about going to Burns. So anybody who's ever been to Tampa knows Burns Steakhouse.
Should I make a really bad Jameis Winston crab leg joke?
Yeah, yeah. If you'd like to.
Nah,
you pretty much just did.
Just, yeah.
I was like expecting an actual joke.
No, yeah, that was subtle.
Subtle, yes. so yeah, this, but Burn Steakhouse is like, listen, Jeff Ruby, you're great. I love you, but Burns puts him to shame. Like this place is an unbelievable steakhouse. It is insanely expensive. It's like the splurge meal, but I feel like if there's ever a time to splurge, it's the beginning of the season when you got the money. You know, it's like worry about the other meals later in the year later, you know. But I'm gonna go ahead and maybe I have to splurge and do a Burns Steakhouse action. Maybe do that on Sunday night instead. I don't know. It could be our lucky day if I can get us in there. This place is incredible. So we've got the Tampa game, Monday Night Football, Jameis Winston, all those things. Very exciting, I guess.
I can't believe that I didn't get any, hey, it was a night game on Friday night. Prime time?
Oh, yeah, prime time.
Victory, Andy Dalton.
Yeah, I don't think anybody's counting that as
I was waiting for one,
it's not prime
for
time.
One
it wasn't
tweet.
National TV, so this Monday would have to be.
Okay. So it's not actual prime time. It's just broadcast prime time. Okay, I'm learning.
Yeah, it's different.
All right, so he can win a night game. It just doesn't matter. It's just where.
Well, it's got to be on national television.
Okay.
That was on Bengals Raid TV Network.
I'm just making sure.
Yeah, that's – come on now. Let's get real. I mean, you're right, though. Yeah, if we're counting prime time as a preseason game against the Giants –
It was night. It was prime
he did
time.
Well.
I don't know.
He did well. You know,
I was curious. I was just curious what the people thought. The fact that I got Josh Johnson questions maybe answered that for me.
Yeah, that's true. That's a nice. I don't know. That's more like hazing. You have to answer a Josh Johnson question.
Yeah.
It's like, although I mean, I've been getting some pretty obscure. I got an Obarski question.
Yeah.
I've gotten a lot of obscure questions so far, and I appreciate my people that care about what's going to happen with Tom Obarski. Although I do love he hits the what was it, a 46-yard field goal in the first quarter, and I get like three people tweeting at me like they need to get rid of Nugent,
right?
And then he misses a close up one. And it's like, yeah, those people were kind of gone. They decided to go ahead and have a few more pops and fall asleep and pass out. before they go trying to fire a kicker because one guy came in and kicked a 46-yarder. So we got Tampa. We've got that coming up. So we'll obviously have plenty more after the Tampa game on game two in our first road trip of the year. But for now, let's run through some Twitter questions here. So sent out for some of you to send what you want to know. We're here for you. We try to be beat writers of the people. So let's see what we've got here. We've got a few. Let's start with this. My man Craig at Love the Raps, LUV the Raps. Who doesn't love the Raps? I love the Raps. He wants to know, would you say this is Marv's deepest roster ever? I will say, since I've been around here for a little bit, I don't know that it is as deep as the 13 roster. I think the 2013 team that won the North and was undefeated at home, I think that roster was deeper. There's a few spots on this team. Like we mentioned earlier, we talked about receiver. We talked about the no snaps at tight end and the back end of the offensive line. I mean, you know, there's a lot of wondering who the heck's going to take those spots, and not because there's too many good players there, because it's like, okay, you got to see how these play out with these young guys.
Yeah.
There's been other rosters where that's not been the case, where that you couldn't find me a weak spot anywhere.
Yeah, and that's rare to find.
Yeah.
But I guess for me, I'd have a problem going deepest roster. When there are so many questions at backup quarterback, there are so many questions after your number three wide receiver. There may be depth in some key areas, but to me, when you're talking about so many questions after your number one tight end, like, I mean, yeah, we're talking really high profile, very important skill position players. Now, defensively, I think they look pretty good. I mean, we're still wondering what's going on at safety after Leon Hall. So, I mean, there's depth, but I think off the cuff, even just coming in, looking at it like, wow, if some injury happens, what do they do? It's hard to say.
Yeah.
The depth all around is great if you're wondering seriously what happens if player A, B, or C gets hurt.
Right, so. Yeah. I think I would definitely say their defensive depth is amongst as good as it's been. Deron Smith has played well. Yeah. So you like what you see there at safety. I think they would be fine with him being the fourth safety, with Hall being sort of in that mix as well in some positions. So I think you're okay with that. Linebacker, I mean, there's a lot there at linebacker to go through. I mean, Chris Carter was taking first team reps as a rush end, and I don't know if he's on the roster at this point. So, you know, they've got a lot there. The defense is definitely depth wise far ahead of the offense. The offense, I think, could, you know, be the top skill position players are maybe, I would like them better, but the fall off if they go down is deeper. And we found that when I did the injury rankings with the WAR, where it was a lot of offensive players at the top, because your drop off is just so significant if Eifert or Green or Dalton go down. I mean, there's not the depth there. All right, so let's keep going here. From Garrett Rucker, G Rucker 99, I like it. Asks, will Margus Hunt play against the Bugs? Oh, the Bucks.
Well, there might be bugs down in Tampa.
There will be bugs.
And you will have nasty to use a nice swim move to get them out of your face. So.
Yeah, no doubt. So he meant the Bucks. Will Greg Little make the roster? Oh, two of our favorite Twitter topics. Margus Hunt, always a popular topic. Margus Hunt might play against Tampa. He was kind of a late scratch. on Friday. He wasn't listed originally among the players not expected to participate that comes out, which is the equivalent of the inactive list, an hour and a half before the game, but yet he was in street clothes and didn't play. So I think they decided at the last second he wasn't quite ready. I think he's got a chance for sure to play against Tampa. He was in part of all the full contact against the Giants in practices. He's really had a nice recovery, a very pleasant recovery from, I think a lot of people were worried that it would go on and drag on a little longer, but he admitted to being surprised how fast it's gone at some point.
And he knows, and he wants to play, because we've talked about a lot on this podcast already, the defensive line depth. He knows that he needs to be out there and show something.
Yeah. No, he does. And so there's going to be a few big games for him to get out there and play. So I would imagine, I think there's a good chance, if you were asking me, if it was a gun to the head pick where I had to make a call or someone's gonna pull the trigger, I'd say he plays against the Bucks. But it'd be close. I definitely think he plays in games 3 and 4.
Yes. Yes.
Barring a setback. So part two, another one of our favorite Bengals Twitter topics is, will Greg Little make the roster? You know what, people? You don't want to hear this. You don't. So maybe it's time to stop the treadmill or pull off to the side of the road. But Greg Little has played well here in camp. He's had a very nice camp. I don't know if it's an urgency thing where he feels that he knows this is it for him. He needs to do it now or forever hold his peace, or seize the opportunity on the back end of this roster. But he has played well. He had maybe probably the nicest play of the game with his long catch in the fourth quarter, and he's made some plays in camp, and he hasn't had a ton of drops. Now, you know, he's been a good practice player before, but had the issue with drops in games. But from what we've seen, he's looked pretty good. He might make this roster.
Yep, and he'll be given every opportunity. I mean, I think I tweeted this out Friday night where, you know, Denarius Moore and Greg Little have over 100 games of experience, a couple hundred catches, and here they are running around in the fourth quarter of a first preseason game.
Right.
So they're both in that spot of needing to prove something. And you're right, Paul. He, you know, aside from maybe an iffy first couple days, you know, once he was signed, it has looked good. And look, when Marvin Lewis comes out in a press conference and just basically says, "This is it."
Yeah.
And when people, what did Marvin say?
And the team already moved on from him.
Yeah, and what did Marvin say? He's like, when I'm done with you, you're pretty much done in the league.
Yes.
Like, that's about as strong of a statement, in my opinion, that a coach can make about a sort of a veteran type guy.
Yeah.
And, you know, at least to this point, we just talked about that depth and where is it? And, you know, right now he's showing.
Yeah. So we've got Greg Little maybe making the roster. I mean, it's pretty much, because if you're breaking down the battle, you've got AJ, you've got Marvin Jones, you've got Mohamed Sanu, Mari Alford's going to make this team. And then you've got maybe two spots. I mean, Rex Burkhead is technically a receiver, but he's in the running back room. So he, you know, you could maybe afford to keep one less receiver. But you're still talking about at least one more spot.
Right.
So it's pretty much what, Denarius Moore and Greg Little at this point. I don't know who else would be in that mix to actually make the 53.
Yeah, the undrafted kid, Desmond Lawrence, really hasn't done it. Tevin Reese hasn't done anything.
Not happening.
No.
So, I mean, those two guys maybe fighting for, maybe they both make it. Maybe I don't know if they both would make it. With Burkhead able to come over and play and I think that you probably are going.
Their hand may be forced. I know Rex Burkhead was feeling good after the game, and there doesn't seem to be an issue there. But obviously, he's going to have to prove to be healthy as you're getting closer to week one. That may, because he is sort of playing slot receiver now, even as with the RB after his name, as the coaches continue to point out,
he's not playing running back.
Right. I guess maybe that could be the only thing. Maybe that
right
changes something is how
he seems to be okay. Right. I mean, he didn't He said right. He felt good and doesn't seem to be serious. He expects to be up. So I think you'll continue to see him out there. So they could have asked spot. So maybe you're looking at Greg Little versus Denarius Moore as your big end of the roster battle there.
Brandon Tate. Brandon Tate.
I'm sorry.
Everybody else's other favorite Bengals Twitter question.
Yeah, I know. I'm sorry I left Brandon Tate out because, I mean, there's a good chance he makes this team as well. I mean, but.
Now all of the treadmills.
Yeah,
around the greater Cincinnati area,
and this is what I was talking about though. This is why maybe you're trading a defensive lineman for a receiver right. because we're talking about Brandon Tate, Denarius Moore, and Greg Little
right
now making this team.
But here's the interesting. Okay, this could dovetail into so many other areas. Denarius Moore, I would think, was brought in because Hugh Jackson had some familiarity with him in Oakland. It was brief,
yes.
but there was some. We've heard about. The language of this offense that, you know, there's a lot to learn. I don't know. So maybe that winnows the field of trade prospects of, like, guys Hugh's coached before
mm-hmm.
or guys who have run similar offenses that have, you know, it's, again, inside football, like, language versus numbers and who can actually, like, show up and participate
yeah.
immediately. So that, I mean, and that's the thing with Greg Little. That's why they brought him back, right? He kind of knows what he's doing.
Because he knows the system enough.
And then, you know, and that's why Brandon Tate, right?
Right.
All we hear, Paul, he knows what he's doing.
He knows what
we
he's
know
doing.
What to expect.
Yeah, you do know so what to expect him not to get open.
And that's clearly important.
Sorry, so much hate in my game today.
That's clearly important to this coaching staff. Yeah. So, you know, when you're – yeah. So Bengals Twitter just broke. The treadmill's all
yeah,
stopped.
Yeah, Greg Little, Brandon Tate, Denarius Moore. So maybe that's 2 for 3. Yeah. Or, you know, or 3 for 2, I mean, right. maybe. Or
which
maybe
is why,
less.
Which is
or maybe one of those three.
Right, which is why Denarius Moore was back returning punts, too, on Friday night.
Right. Yeah, no doubt. I mean, they want him to be ready in that right. role. It's kind of a messy room.
Paul almost fell off his own chair talking about this.
Yeah, I know. Let's do one last question and get us out of here. Let's see. I've got a couple here. So from Eric Finello at eFinello, as constructed, can this defense harass and torment opposing playoff quarterbacks enough to make a run with a good/average QB? AKA, second tweet, could this defense make a great elite quarterback look like a below-average quarterback?
Hmm. Well, I guess we won't know until we know. But
they've made, I mean, this defense... Now, granted, this was under Mike Zimmer, made a lot of great quarterbacks look bad. They beat Aaron Rodgers. They beat Tom Brady.
We know the list.
They've beaten a lot of Super Bowl winning quarterbacks. They beat Ben Roethlisberger. You know, they can do that. That's a hard question because you're talking about there are questions about how much will this defensive line really be revitalized by the addition of Michael Johnson and Pat Sims and some of the
Geno Atkins being
back again? I mean, how much will that be the difference? I mean, we don't know. This could be this Michael Johnson thing could be something that kind of lingers, and he's not right for a lot of the year.
Right.
I mean, he talked about not being right last year when he had a high ankle sprain in the opener. Right. We're talking about an MCL that's keeping him out for over a month right now.
Yeah.
I don't know. As far as being able to get after the pass, I mean, this is a group, though, in the past was one of the best pass-rushing defensive lines that the Bengals have had. And if they truly are getting back to the rotation and Geno truly is a difference maker and Michael Johnson comes in and does what they expect him to do or is even at least more than capable to limit snaps for Wallace Gilberry, so he's effective.
You got
a chance.
The way I'm viewing this question, though, is even those statistically great Mike Zimmer defenses still fell apart in those playoff games. And maybe that's what he's wondering, is for what they're showing so far. I mean, Geno was healthy in that Fisher-Price pass rush a couple years ago. Where did they go? And I know we talked about this in the 10 questions mm-hmm. leading into seasons. Like, what happens in these playoff games? And it's a total team sort of, So maybe that's the question, is for all the problems Andy Dalton or all the hate shade thrown his way, I mean, mm-hmm. these dudes haven't really shown up either.
No.
After putting together some statistical seasons. So even after beating all of those quarterbacks, right?
Yep.
We know the list, and you just ran through the better half of them. And then when it showed up in primetime, I don't know. You know, if they go 10-6, 11-5, make the playoffs, that means they're beating Russell Wilson, they're beating Phillip Rivers, they're beating Ben Roethlisberger and Joe Flacco, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, we know the roster. Peyton Manning, San Francisco might not be any good, but Colin Kaepernick is still going to cause problems. I mean, so if they're going to get to the playoffs again, they're going to have to beat a ton of these guys again.
Yes.
So I think the question is, can they do it in the playoffs?
And the track record answers that, but you would like to, you know, it could be different.
Yeah. And Andy Dalton could throw for 400 yards in that playoff game, right?
So,
could
Eric,
be different.
Eric, I hate to tell you, we really can't answer that until you see him in the playoffs. I mean,
right.
if it needs to be a top five defense.
Yeah.
It does.
It does.
For this team to really make a run, it has to be a top five defense.
Right.
It has to. I don't see any other way. Even if this offense is great. And all these weapons stay healthy, you still don't have a top 5 or 10 quarterback, so you have to have another weapon.
Right.
And that's got to be a top 5 defense and a running game that can ball control in January. And so we'll find out. So in a non-answer to your question is how we'll go out. But so anyway, yeah, so let's we're going to go ahead and wrap this up. Remember, we'll be back here next week after the Monday night game against Tampa Bay in Tampa, and we'll get to you as soon as we can once we get back safe and sound in the Ohio Valley for you. So, till then, see, we need a what do you think? What do you think? There was a lot of hate. There was a lot of hate. So I feel like maybe some something about see, what keeps coming in my head. I got all these Chappelle Show skits in my head now. Ever since we started doing the hate from the player haters, The one that pops in my head is the R. Kelly. But we can't do that. We can't do that. But maybe we could play some, like, original R. Kelly.
Yeah. Hey, I'm from Chicago.
You are from
Chicago. I'm from the South Side.
The Shy.
So, yeah, you will not, you know what? Hey, I understand.
Some things happen.
I understand.
Things happen.
But you know what? That's where you're from.
That's where you
gotta always got to go. So I will roll with you with R. Kelly.
All right. So I'm going to bring in some special R. Kelly here for you. So here's a little R. Kelly. We're on our way out. And we will talk to you next week on the Bengals Beat Podcast. Hashtag BBP.
Down in the valley. Oh, I am a vision. And I can see clearly. If anybody asks you who I am. Just stand up tall, look them in the face and say, I'm that star up in the sky, I'm that mountain peak up high. Hey, I made it, I'm the world's greatest. And I'm that little bit of hope, when my back's against the ropes, I can feel it, I'm the world's greatest. A giant, I am an eagle, oh, I am a lion, down in the jungle, I am a marching band, I am the people.